What's up? This is Moving On Up, episode 57, 100% medically accurate, 100% your normal contingent of co-hosts, my friend Dave.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Ryan.
He's Ryan.
100% correct, Dave. That is the tagline for this week, 100% medically accurate. It is a film that we talked just a little bit about last week. One of my favorites. However, if you can figure out what that movie is, where that tagline is from, you can send it to us in an email at moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your answer directly at Dave on the Twitter, at moviesonup, or leave it on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup. If you do all that, or any of those things, if you guess right, and if we choose you, then you can win a prize package courtesy of Dave and I, which will be full of stuff.
Prizes,
exactly. It'll be a pack full of prizes that you will get in the mail at some point in the future. In the future, this week, we're going to have our discussion episode. It seems like the past couple weeks, we've been more discussion on a particular movie.
The last 3 weeks have been a movie discussion.
Okay. Well, we took a little bit of a break from that this week. We're going to get back to doing some lists. It will be the top five villains of all time. We've got Superman coming out this week. Spoiler alert. We'll talk about that later. But in honor of Superman and General Zod, ? Not so much anymore. We thought we would give you our top five villains of all time. Dave was just looking for another excuse to talk about Benedict Cumberbatch. So we'll see if he has the nards to put Seabatch on there.
Spoiler, he's honorable mention.
Oh, so I guess not. He went from on the list when I asked him last week to now he just doesn't have the nards. But you can see what Dave does have the nards to put on there. That episode will probably be up later on the week, Wednesday or Thursday, more than likely. So I think we both did it a little bit differently. Dave went with some underrated folks.
We'll talk about it.
I went with some overrated ones, but you know, if I guarantee we've probably missed your favorite. And if we have, let us know. moviesonup@gmail.com. We'd like to hear what you guys think. We always like to hear what you guys think. We'd love to hear what you guys had to think about any of the movies that came out this week. If you went out to see The Internship or The Purge. The Purge, it seemed like there were a lot of people that wanted to go.
And they did. Yeah, so 2 weeks in a row, I swung and a missed. Now You See Me surprised me. Then The Purge, but we said it was set up. It was set up in the same way where it had decent buzz going around. It was marketed heavily. So The Purge came in number one with $34 million, kind of out of nowhere. That's not the kind of movie that generally opens in the summer. I mean, The Strangers was an August release. This opened at double that. Budget of $3 million. This is the lowest budgeted movie to ever open number one in the summer. Because it's usually, I mean, your number two movie.
The Purge 2.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, with this money, you can make up to 10 purges. But like,
Purge 10 times.
Yeah. So I just, and it's a concept that you could make the same movie over and over again with different characters in case any of the leads died.
Right. They do it every year, don't they? Like, this Purge, they do it
I mean, this is the kind
year.
Of thing where...
Summer Saw.
Yeah, and I don't think Ethan Hawke and Lena Headey were the people that were what people were going to see. I think the concept hooked people enough. So, I mean, you could turn this into, if you make it for $3 to $5 million, you could just do a Purge every summer until it runs dry and just do a new cast every time. Like, you've set it up to where you could, whether they will or not, we'll see. Fast the Furious 6 fell off 44% for number two. That still brought in $19 million. It crossed the $200 million barrier, so it's sitting at $202 million after 3 weeks. Now You See Me, surprised last week, crazy good word of mouth. It only dropped off 35% for a second weekend. That's pretty impressive. It also brought in another $19 million. It's sitting at $60 million after 2 weeks. And then we get to Vince Vaughn. Last summer, one of the most baffling things to me was The Watch, how terribly it bombed. The Internship, not on that level of bomb, but still bombed. I mean, it's $17 million. It opened in fourth. I mean, it opened, you know, it wasn't even in the top two. So,
no, four is not one or two.
So you have a movie that's been out 3 weeks, still making more money. Last week's number one, still making more money. And didn't even take... I mean, The Purge jumped into this spot when something moved out. I don't know what that's doing to Vince Vaughn's career. I don't know what it does to Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson together, but it's not a good start. I mean, granted, it's only a $58 million budget. It might make some of that back, but it's probably going to fall fast. I mean, this week's a big weekend, and then there's just heavy hitters coming out for the next... It's going to fall pretty
far. I mean, there's comedies coming out, so it's not just big movies that are
Wednesday
coming out.
Wednesday a comedy comes out.
Right.
So, yeah.
That looks really,
really
funny.
Really good. So,
a lot of good buzz on that.
So, yeah, I mean, The Internship, I think, is just going to fall far. I think by next weekend, it'll be lucky to make $7 million, I think, if that. I'm thinking more in the five range.
There's been a couple instances this summer where a movie had a really, really short window that if it was going to do well, it had to. Yeah, had to have a great opening weekend because there's not really a soft week coming up. So this was the window for The Internship. So short internship, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So then Epic's at $5 million with another $11 million. Star Trek Into Darkness brought another $11 million in. It's sitting right.
Starring Dave's honorable mention, best film
Benedict
of all
Cumberbatch.
Time. Yeah.
It'll be over by the time midnight hits today, it'll hit that $200 million mark. It's just under there. After Earth didn't open strong, fell 61%. Just another $10 million.
61% of nothing.
Yeah, so it's only sitting at $46 million after two. It's another one of those. Its window is small, so it's going to disappear quick, and it's a long way from that $130 million budget.
Now you see it.
Jesus, it's faring well overseas. It's making decent money. Hangover 3 still falling.
Which is also Hangover 3 is another one that's making a lot of money overseas.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's. It made $7 million. It's made $102 million back on a $103 million budget. So all that overseas, it's making it somewhat profitable. Iron Man 3 still hanging in the top 10 with another $5 million. It sits at $394 million. I said beginning of summer it'd make $450 million.
Yeah.
So it's going to do that for a little over four. Then Great Gatsby, we said it would hang around for a while. It's clinging on in the top 10 still with another $4 million. 136 overall. And then Mud, still just in 580 screens, still bringing in over a million. So some of the limiteds, Much Ado About Nothing, the Joss Whedon Shakespeare, open on five screens, 171,000. A little less than I expected. That was 34,000 per screen. That's still really good, mm-hmm. but a little less.
For a Joss Whedon movie, I mean, I know it's not, you know, the Avengers, but I'm interested enough that had it been around here, would I have gone to see that over The Internship and The Purge? Yes.
Yeah. But I kind of want to see Violet and Daisy.
Yeah.
Nobody else did. It opened on 17 screens, only brought in just under $10,000, $587 per screen. I would have gladly gone to see that. I think it looks great. I mean, it looks different. And then even worse than that, Syrup. One screen, $301. No pancakes for those people.
I was just thinking about how slowly that money must be trickling in.
Boo.
Oh, yours was good? No pancakes.
Yeah.
Shut up, Dave. I've got some fantastic news for you, Dave. Bill Winningham's Fables to get a shot on the big screen, and that is no tall tale. The DC Vertigo series, once set for a TV adaptation, now set to be produced for a film adaptation by Heyday Film. They did some kind of Harry Potter movies, whatever that is. Jeremy Slater of the Trank Fantastic Four will script, and Nicolaj Arcel, who will direct that Mads Mikkelsen joint, A Royal Affair, is on to direct this one.
This is really good news if it's done right. I love the Fables series. The first, I only read maybe the first 50 issues, but it's really good. It would have worked awesome as a TV show. And at one point, it was set to go as a TV show by ABC.
But they picked another.
They took Once Upon a Time instead. And so it could work as an awesome movie, and it's set up for an easy franchise. I mean, there's so many characters there. The story is just all your fable characters, your fairy tale stories characters lived in fairy tale land or whatever, and now they're forced to New York by the adversary. So they're living, you know, like Snow White, Prince Charming, the Wolf. They're all living just amongst people. And then there's another spot in upstate New York for like the Three Little Pigs and the ones that don't look human. It's a really awesome story. But to make it work right as one movie, you're going to have to take a lot of elements from that first 50 episodes. Like, it's not set up to where, like, okay, the first 10 episodes set up a good story because it's too serialized at that point. Like, you have to encompass a large scope of the story, but it can be epic. I mean, there's a lot that can happen. There's obviously an audience for it between Grimm and Once Upon a Time doing okay. So you can appeal to the comic book fans and you can appeal to those people all at once. So,
and it seems like the guys that produced the Harry Potter movies, like, I mean, they know what they're doing. In a similar ilk, not quite the same. I guess that kind of fair targeted at maybe that kind of audience.
It's fantasy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This is, and I mean, fantasy based in the real world. Harry Potter technically is fantasy based in the real world, except you weren't in the real world a lot. Like, they were in their own little thing. But this takes place almost entirely in modern day New York City. So it'll be a cool little contrast to see how they deal with it. And I mean, your main characters like Snow White, Prince Charming, the wolf is in human form now, Rose Red. Like, it could be, there's a lot of potential here.
Yeah.
They just have to nail it. Like, I think the margin for error is very, very small.
I can understand why ABC would not want to take both of those because it does sound very, very similar to Once Upon a Time. But, you know, that's doing well. So if you can have a movie, I don't want to say a movie version of that, but a movie that's close enough to it, you would think that that audience would carry over and would see it. And then there are, you know, it is a pretty successful book from what I understand. I don't read it, but, you know, a lot of people seem to, so I guess, yeah, you're appealing to a broad base on that one. I've got a story here that looks like it might be the best worst idea for a holiday. The best worst movie director, Michael Paul Stevenson, will direct his first narrative, Girlfriend's Day, starring Bob Odenkirk. Odenkirk will play a greeting card writer who gets wrapped up in trying to come up with the perfect card for a new holiday, Girlfriend's Day. Dark comedy.
Dark comedy written by Bob Odenkirk, starring Bob Odenkirk, which is awesome because he's been one of those guys that for the last 20 years has just nailed everything he's done, but hasn't really gotten that
start. He's not as big as you think he should be.
I mean, but people recognize him when they see him.
Yeah.
But they may not know his name. And I mean, but that could change soon. If he gets that Breaking Bad spinoff, and then if this does well, I mean, he's getting starring roles. Because it's not even like, oh, he's been getting starring roles, they're just in small movies. He hasn't been.
That's the thing.
He's got the talent to do it. He's awesome.
I feel like there are going to be a bunch of people that recognize him from Mr. Show, and that makes all the sense in the world. But apart from that, like, the most recognizable thing, it's probably Saul Goodman, right?
Oh, that's definitely his second. Yeah, absolutely. But he's, like, he appeared on The Office briefly this past season. Awesome. Like, everything he's shown up in, he's been awesome. And, like, Mr. Show, I credit for Mr. Show in the state or where I got my sense of humor. So anything involving anybody from those two, I mean, essentially Bob Odenkirk, I owe a lot of, like, who I became as a person to Bob Odenkirk.
He's going to be pissed off when he hears this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's awesome. He's had a chance to write and direct some stuff. None of it's done super well, but it's a weird idea for a movie that I think could be really cool.
I think I'm interested to see what Stevenson does with it. I mean, I've seen
Best
Worst Movie. I haven't seen American Scream
yet. It's really good. It's just about the people that decorate their houses for Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's done two really good documentaries.
And it seems like, at least with Best Worst Movie, I mean, he was in Troll 2. That's kind of the hook about that movie. But he seems like he's kind of got that same sense of humor where he sort of gets it. And I think it'll be a good match with Odenkirk. I'm just interested to see how he actually directs a movie and not, you know, makes a documentary, because it is quite a leap.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of people have made that jump well. And I'm just, my worry is that it doesn't get too weird. And that's a large part of why Odenkirk hasn't been, because he doesn't really always appeal to the mainstream. A lot of the stuff he does is pretty weird. So
I actually don't care.
Oh, I don't care. Like, I love it.
I know I'm going to like it.
Oh, I do too.
And maybe I'm just being so, I don't care if anybody else likes it. I mean, I like to see it do well because I'd like to see more stuff from them. But
yeah,
if it ends up, you know, I'm the only one that sees it and
I'm
like it,
then
I don't care. Right. This could be the worst idea I've ever heard for a movie. Warner Brothers seemingly makes the odd choice to bring an Archie movie to the big screen. The studio has brought in Jason Moore, who directed Pitch Perfect, to direct. Okay, that's a check. Robert Aguirre Tsukasa, who's writing the Carrie remake, to do the writing. Well, I'm going to say that that's a check.
Yeah.
Sight unseen, but okay. Here's where it gets a little weird. Robert has got a real soft spot for Archie, which I found out kind of doing some research. He's written several, not one, but several Archie-related properties over the years, almost all of them involving Archie and zombies. That's right, zombies. That is one way to resurrect a dead franchise.
I mean, all his Archie titles are weird. There's the zombies ones. I think there's one where he splits time between modern day and Archie time. Is Archie still a thing? Like, do people still know?
No,
Archie.
I don't
think so. Like, I don't even know like much about Archie, and I'm relatively, on the whole scheme of things, I'm decently young, but like, I just can't see a clamoring for Archie. I mean, we talked about that for Lone Ranger or some of these older...
Well, even when Lone Ranger was first being talked about for a movie, that was going to have werewolves.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's how you do it. I'm not saying this is going to be good, but nobody cares about Archie, but people care about zombies.
Why not just make a high school zombie movie?
I mean, I guess you could.
I mean, I like Jason Moore. I thought he took a movie that I shouldn't have loved and made me love it. I mean, I don't know how much he had to do with that.
I credit
Moore.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I really give
her... So basically, if you cast Anna Kendrick as Archie, I'm in.
Well, there were chicks in Archie, weren't there?
I don't know.
At least a couple of them.
I honestly don't know. Is Jughead from Archie or is that from Bazooka Joe?
No, that's... Jughead is Archie. From what I understand, spoiler alert, Jughead is the one that causes the zombie outbreak.
Yeah. Yeah, so it just doesn't make any sense to me.
An Archie movie makes
no
sense.
An Archie movie makes no sense, let alone throwing zombies in.
In a vacuum. The zombies, it does, no, I mean, if I was an Archie purist, I'd probably be really upset at this. But because there's no such thing, I feel like they could put zombies in.
But there's a comic series about it already. So it's not like they're just randomly throwing it out. And I mean, there might not even be zombies. It's just the writer they hired just wrote a horror movie and he writes an Archie series that involves zombies. And,
yeah.
It might not be involving zombies, but there's a good chance it will.
All signs point to yes. A couple huge studios pulling off an Interstellar agreement last week. In order to team with Paramount to co-produce Chris Nolan's Interstellar, Warner gives up its stake in the Friday the 13th and South Park franchises. Paramount now has 5 years to get these projects off the ground before the rights revert back to Warner.
It's not fully back to Warner. The problem with these is that Paramount and Warner have co-owned both of those. They've both co-owned Friday the 13th and South Park. So getting that Friday the 13th reboot off the ground was rough because there's two studios involved. One of them wants to do the work, but the other one wants half the money for no other work. So now they have 5 years to where anything they do with it, they get all of it. They don't have to split it. So I don't really think Friday the 13th needed a sequel. I thought the story wrapped up and it was a good movie on its own. I'm sure it was terrible. I didn't even watch it. But we don't need a re. We don't
I
need
didn't
a,
hate it.
We don't need a sequel to it. I would kill for another South Park movie. It just means if we're gonna get one, it's likely
it has
gonna,
to be the next 5 years.
Within the next 5 years, so. I mean, I could see them ending it in 5 years and ending it with a movie.
Is South Park still on?
Yeah.
Like new episodes? Yeah.
Still really good, too.
I'm sure it is. That would be a very interesting way to kind of end the series is with a movie. Mia Wachowski, now the top dog on Crimson Peak. Due to scheduling conflicts, Emma Stone has left Guillermo del Toro's thriller, Crimson Peak. Spider-Man, Woody Allen, and Cameron Crowe projects all upcoming for Stone, so that forces Del Toro in another direction. Obviously, that would be the direction of Mia Wasikowski. Benedict Cumberbatch, Jessica Chastain, and Charlie Hunnam all still on board.
I like the cast a lot more with Emma Stone, but that's a quality backup.
I don't know that I would say I like it a lot more with Emma Stone. You know what I mean?
I do. I like it a lot more with Emma Stone. But I like Wasikowska. She's really good, and she makes really interesting choices. Like, she makes good... I don't think she's made a bad movie yet. I mean, not... Since Alice, like, what broke her on, she's, for the most part, avoided big-time paycheck movies and made really good movies.
And, I mean, it seems like... she's not exactly got a bunch of free time herself. She's got quite a few things in the works too, so I'm not 100% sure if it's been confirmed that she's going to be able to do this. I ran down the things that Emma Stone's got going, but I seem to remember Wasikowska having quite a few projects of her own.
Even if you take Emma Stone out, and even if you lose Mia Wasikowska, Cumberbatch, Chastain, and Hunnam are more than enough to carry this movie. I mean, you could throw a fourth one in there. As long as she can hang, she'll be fine, because that's a strong top three. Emma Stone makes it an amazing top four, but that's a very strong top three. So it'd be great if they can bring somebody the quality of Wasikowska in, but even if she can't, I don't think it's as important as like replacing Tom Cruise in Man from U.N.C.L.E. You know, it's not as crucial.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm just not as excited about Man from U.N.C.L.E., so I don't really...
Oh, I'm not either.
I don't care. Yeah. How did we miss Super Spy last week?
What do you mean?
As the headline.
It was.
No, it wasn't, was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, then never mind. I'm glad.
That's how I wrote it.
Yeah.
Unless you didn't read it, which you do sometimes.
No, I only do that when they're bad. Japanese filmmaker to make English debut with
you
Tom
just
Hardy.
Disproved your theory.
Why is that?
Because you read that one and it was really bad.
No, this one was good. Now I don't know if I said with Tom Hardy, because that maybe that's the part that you got upset, because I didn't finish with Tom Hardy. Following Chan-Wook Park's English debut, Stoker, starring the aforementioned Mia Wasikowska, Takeshi Meek taps Tom Hardy to lead The Outsiders. The film will follow Hardy's character post-World War II as he becomes increasingly entangled in the Yakuza.
I like the story enough. It's interesting
neat,
enough.
Yeah.
And Tom Hardy in that role is kind of cool. Takashi Miike's done some cool stuff as a director. I'm interested. Like, I'll see. I'm a lot more interested in this than Chan-Woo Park's American debut.
Well, I was interested in that. It got some bad word of mouth, so I'm less interested now. And I don't mean to sound like a dumb American, but I'm glad I'll get to see a Takeshi Meek movie that I don't have to read, because that kind of gets old.
It just seems like a tame story for him.
Compared to Ichi the Killer, sure, but we don't. I mean, it's about the Yakuza, so there could be, you know, quite a bit of stuff going on. Although, I mean, 13 Assassins was relatively tame. It got kind of bloody at the end, but not as much as I was expecting from a Takeshi Meek movie. But, yeah, I mean, I think the story for this sounds really cool. I'm excited to see more Tom Hardy and things. I know that's not really a problem for you, but sounds good. I would give it a try anyway, just based on the director. He's the one that I will see just about anything he does, but I'm happy that it at least sounds good. Universal hoping Peter Berg won't sink their Oscar hopes. The studio is pinning its hopes on Berg's Lone Survivor. The film will receive a limited release December 27th and platform toward the early January wide release. Mark Wahlberg plays the lone survivor of his SEAL team on an ill-fated mission in Afghanistan. Based on a New York Times bestseller co-written by the SEAL Wahlberg portrays in the movie. Ben Foster, Emil Hirsch, Eric Bana, and Taylor Kitsch, star of Berg's Battleship, all on board.
I've been kind of excited about this. My interest was piqued just due to the story, but I thought it was just going to be a Marky Mark action movie. That's how I always felt it was.
Fantasized about it.
Well, no, that's how I always pictured it, but the fact that they're moving it into... They're only doing that limited release just so it's eligible for the Oscars. Maybe they're just trying to cash on the whole Navy SEAL thing and thinking that just because it's the material get an Oscar, but that's kind of weird. So I think maybe, I mean, and it's just weird that we're at a point now where a Marky Mark movie has legitimate Oscar hopes.
A Marky Mark movie, direct, I know Peter Berg's, Battleship's not the only thing he's done, I know, but a Marky Mark movie with the director of Battleship and the star of Battleship.
But I mean, like, when you think about it, Marky Mark's a legit, I mean, he was nominated for Best Actor, so... Him in, like, a movie and them thinking, like, oh, this could get us some Oscars isn't far-fetched. So.
Now, I do feel a little bad that we've referred to him as Marky Mark about four times. And probably maybe going to be an Oscar movie.
But, I mean, that's an awesome funky bunch of actors joining them, too. Ben Foster, Hirsch, Bana. I mean, that's a quality cast there.
Taylor Kitsch. I noticed you left him off. I did put him on the list. You don't even like Emil Hirsch, do you?
No.
No?
But he's good. He's a good actor.
Okay. All right. Quicksilver. Joss Whedon wants to make a kick-ass choice for his Quicksilver in Avengers 2. If you can't guess, Aaron Taylor Johnson appears to be close to landing the role that Evan Peters landed for Bryan Singer's Days of Future Past last week.
That's an upgrade over Evan Peters. I mean, Aaron Taylor Johnson, which it's so weird he took his wife's last name. But I like it. And, I mean, I don't know, especially if they get Saoirse Ronan in his Scarlet Witch, which they want, that's a nice duo there.
Yeah.
And
I mean, couple that are going to be in the movie for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, but that's enough of a talent that if they want to go make a Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver movie or Petra.
I was going to say
they can't use the names, but I mean, they could branch off.
Wanda and Peter.
Yeah. Maybe not in their own movie, but be a bigger part of maybe the next Captain movie or Thor or something. I mean, it's just weird. I'm interested to see his reaction to it because he was approached about Spider-Man right after Kick-Ass, and he had some stuff to say that's like, yeah, get creative. Just because I played a superhero doesn't mean I'm the only one that can play a superhero. So,
I think he would have been good, though.
I think he would have been awesome as Spider-Man, but not as good as Logan Lerman. But
or Donald Glover.
That would have been awesome.
Hot Tub Time Machine 2 gets that much more awesome. Essentially hiring a couple folks from that show Donald Glover's on. Chevy Chase will be returning, and Gillian Jacobs cast as the female lead. About damn time.
She's good.
Yes.
I started a movie with
her. I was going to say, your co-star.
No,
That's exactly how she would term it, too.
I mean, that cast is, yeah, you lose Cusack, but Chevy Chase for
replace him with Adam Scott? Which I can live with that.
Yeah, I think for that, it's kind of a lateral move. I mean, I like Scott. It might even be.
Yeah.
Like
for a comedy, I think so.
But, I mean, that cast is awesome. Chevy Chase, he wasn't needed, but having him back will be nice. The cast that's coming back is awesome. Adam Scott is awesome. And then Gillian Jacobs is a female lead. That's awesome. Especially she should be being the lead in more movies.
Yeah, I feel like she's shown up here and there, like really kind of
like
small
her and
bit
Allison
stuff.
Brie are going to have pretty good movie careers once Community's done.
I feel like Allison Brie's been in some
she's
more
been
bigger
up in
stuff.
A lot. Yeah, she's been showing up. Like, she's already having a good movie career. But I think she's working her way up to that. She's now the best friend or the sister.
Right.
I think it's not long before she's the name above the title.
It should be. I think I'm done like with Katherine Heigl. I hope.
I think everybody else is, too.
But I just feel like instead of putting her in, just put one of these two because they're funny and people like them.
Yeah.
Which would be a change. Rumors of Leo as Rasputin just won't seem to die. Warner Brothers will be producing a script written by American Sniper writer Jason Hall that will star DiCaprio as the sort of fortune teller, mystic kind of guy.
I like Leo, but I generally dislike choices he makes. Like, I don't like a lot of Leo movies. Like, the ones that he wants to do, I'm generally not always that into. Like, I don't really care about this.
I didn't really care about Gatsby, and I think I'm justified in that.
I didn't care about Edgar.
Yeah. Aviator.
Shutter
that was okay.
Island.
Right? Shutter Island didn't mind.
Just for somebody that I like enough. Like, I like Leo. I don't.
Yeah.
But I don't really care about the movies he's in. Like, it makes more sense. If I would say I hate Leo, I feel it would
be justified.
You
have a stronger argument?
Yeah, but I don't.
Then why you would argue that you like him? I mean, I think this character's kind of neat. I think the story's neat. I mean, they tried to kill him a bunch of different ways, poison him. They ended up having to, you know, really kind of get down to it. And it's such a weird character, and I think that, I mean, I don't know much about Russian history, and I don't generally care. But this guy seemed really weird, really strange. I think it'd be an interesting character. And after seeing him do the weirdo kind of thing in Django, I don't know that character is the same as Rasputin, but I'd like to see him give it a whirl.
I mean, the writer's strong. I mean, this dude's coming off writing a script that attracted Steven Spielberg. So that's a good notch on your resume right there.
You could do worse. Merry Christmas, Expendables 3. It seems that you may have found your villain. Mel Gibson, once rumored to direct, now seems close to landing the role as Bad Dude.
He's doing it in Machete Kills.
Machete.
Yeah, so I think he's realized that's what his career is now.
Is over the top.
I think he realized he sugar-titted his way out of, like, prime primo roles. The fact that you got booted from a Hangover 2 cameo. So I think he's realized that. I mean, the Beaver was one of his, like, that showed he could still act. Like, he was really good in the Beaver. I know, but people dismiss that movie probably because of the title and a little bit because of Mel Gibson, but the dude's not a joke anymore. Like, he's not a joke. But
I have trouble with a Jodie Foster movie called The Beaver.
She doesn't. She'd prefer that.
We may not know that, but apparently she does.
But it's a shame that he's now a punchline. I mean, not a shame, because he's a bigot.
He did it to himself.
I'm not justifying his bigotedness.
Bigotry?
But a lot of people have gotten away with the same stuff.
I feel like,
and I think he's back. He'll be back.
Yes, there's a phase where he's just gonna have to take his medicine, and if that means, you know, being in Expendables 3, which he'll get paid for,
yeah,
and being in Machete, which again he'll get paid for. I think, you know, being over the top, being entertaining in those roles can maybe make people
eventually
forget
somebody will give him a
that
shot,
he's a bigot.
And he'll end up, he'll get his John Travolta in Pulp Fiction role, to where just it wakes people up again. Of who he is and brings him back.
So I guess you'd say that landing primo roles might be on Mel Gibson's to-do list. The top of our trailers is the to-do list. I feel like we've had maybe a trailer for this before. This is
there
the second one we've talked
there
about.
There was a teaser a long time ago, because this was originally supposed to be out on Valentine's Day. So there was a teaser a long time ago,
right,
to tease the Valentine's Day release. Then they moved it to August, and this is really the first trailer you've seen since then.
This is a full-blown trailer.
It's a full red band. I loved it.
I thought it was entirely too long.
It's too long.
It's 3.5 minutes long.
Which, yeah, most trailers. There's actually a news that we didn't add. Theater owners are asking for shorter trailers.
And me too.
Yeah, and this is a good example of it. I think it's a good trailer, but it is long. Especially for a comedy. So
I don't want to see 3.5 minutes of jokes.
Exactly. So, I mean, if you cut it down to 2.5, you could cut a minute of those
two
jokes and be fine. But there are some good jokes in it.
There are, but you get the point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Aubrey Plaza's writing, literally, it shows her writing down a list of things she needs to do.
She's going
to
graduate
sexually.
High school, so she needs to do some stuff sexually before she goes off to college. That's what the to-do list is. The movie was originally called The Hand Job. But you see Donald Glover. It's a period piece in the early 90s, it looks like.
Yeah.
Aubrey Plaza, Donald Glover. Bill Hader has like
a couple scenes.
It's just great.
Yeah.
Rachel Bilson is. I think it looks good. I'll agree the trailer was a little long, but I want to see this movie.
Yeah, I do too. And I think she's one that we're a little surprised that she's not kind of headlining more things.
No, I'm not surprised she hasn't. I'm thinking this will elevate her too.
She'll be doing it after this.
Yeah, because after
Safety Not Guaranteed, yeah.
And then this, like, she's doing these smaller movies where she's headlining, but I think it's just a matter of time before she's top-notch among some big-time movies.
A man who he's got to be top-notch because we've made him into a verb. That is James McAvoy. Filth has put up another trailer.
God.
And it looks... I want to high five McAvoy.
Even if I hadn't done the McAvoy turn yet,
this would make you do it.
I'm into this movie.
Yeah.
It's just him boning and doing drugs, getting a blowjob from what looks like a 12-year-old girl, which is kind of...
So he doesn't arrest her?
Yeah. Like, it looks insane. Like, it gives me ideas of, like, Fear and Loathing. Because he is...
Out of
his
mind on drugs.
He's doing his job the whole time.
Yeah.
He's doing... I mean, granted, there's a difference between... journalist covering a motorcycle race on drugs and a cop. But it looks insane. He looks insane. It looks train spottery. I mean, any drug
it's
movie,
from...
the writer of the book, I mean, it looks awesome. It's a really good, the tag, the joke at the end, just the tag. It's just like, there's legitimate laughs, but it's like, you feel bad for laughing at it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not even the movie. movie.
You feel like you're kind of scummy for enjoying what he's doing. But to me, like, if The Hangover would have been like this, I would have loved it.
It looks great. It looks fantastic. If you haven't done the McAvoy turn yet,
I think
this will be the one to do it.
I feel a little odd. Talk about McAvoy turns, going from filth to a Woody Allen movie, but that's what we're going to do. There's a trailer up for Blue Jasmine, which is his newest one. Alec Baldwin, Kate Blanchett. Apparently, she's some kind of a grifter, and he's rich, and she's going to get married to him. I don't care about Woody Allen movies. I don't care about this one, except the Dice Man shows up in the trailer. And that,
Louis C.K.'s in it?
Yeah, Louis C.K.'s in it. He's in the trailer, but you don't really see him do much. But Andrew Dice Clay has a little bit of a scene in there. And I think I'm interested to see Woody Allen direct Andrew Dice Clay.
And I mean, that we talked about it when he was cast. Because I remember we talked about, it was a big deal when he cast Andrew Dice Clay.
Right.
But, I mean, it's just Kate Blanchett. She's, you know, Alec Baldwin's this big rich guy. Turns out he's a criminal. So she moves in with her sister and now going from this rich, lavish style. So what's weird is I didn't see Sarsgaard in the trailer. Peter Sarsgaard is in it. But, I mean, it just, I don't like a lot of Woody Allen movies, but this looks okay. But I don't rush out to see his movies.
This one looks okay because it doesn't seem...
I want to see it just, even if it's just for Louis C.K., which I don't know how much he's in it, but still.
Yeah. Well, expand your palate to all the stand-ups that are in that movie, and maybe it'll be worth it for you. As best I could tell, there are no stand-up comedians in Frozen Ground. However, there is.
It looks hilarious.
It does. An ex-Disney actress. There's nothing funnier than when a prostitute gets kidnapped by the guy that was in the hot tub time machine and is now not, but it's Cusack that's the killer, and he abducts Vanessa Hudgens or something.
Yeah.
She gets away, only to get taken again.
It just looks...
I feel like I've seen this about 100 times.
It looks like a direct-to-DVD movie, just with Nicolas Cage, Vanessa Hudgens, John Cusack,
well,
Roger Mitchell.
Doesn't it hit VOD like this?
Probably.
The
yeah,
same
it's
day?
One of those. Yeah. So, and I mean, Cusack's been having a lot of those. The Numbers Station... The Factory, he's having these like thrillers that are just essentially direct to DVD, like the poor man's direct to DVD. And this Nicolas Cage
direct to VOD.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage makes sense to join that party.
Sure.
It's got Dean Norris from Breaking Bad, 50 Cent.
Man, I missed Curtis Jackson in the trailer. I guess I was not really paying that close of attention.
He plays Pimp Clate Johnson.
As opposed to the Clate Johnson in the movie that isn't a pimp.
Lawyer That's... Clate Johnson is played right. by Kevin Dunn.
I did like how when I was watching the trailer, it was Vanessa Hudgens saying, "Hey, thanks for checking out the trailer for my new movie." I'm thinking, John Cusack, what is the matter with you that you are in whatever?
Well, there's another one of those that we'll get to later.
Speaking of Disney actresses in movies, Selena Gomez looks like Jack and Ethan Hawke.
Oh boy.
Tries to jack his snake, his cobra.
Boy. This movie called Getaway.
Yep.
Oh boy.
It's The Taken and the Furious.
Oh my God. Ethan Hawke's in a car, gets a call. They took his wife. He has to follow instructions and just
drive. Video call.
He drives.
Yep.
Selena Gomez jumps in, looking like Selena Gomez in a hat.
In a hoodie.
Pulling a gun, like, "Oh, give me your car," like, and he's just like, "You picked the wrong car," and then the video call is just like, "Just go, you gotta take her." So now he's got Selena Gomez in his car, who's like, "I ain't gonna die for you," and I bet they form a friendship. And the video call's like, "Oh, you gotta kill her," and I bet he doesn't kill. It just,
well, that happens in the trailer.
Yeah,
the video call
yeah.
says kill her, and he says no.
What in the world? Like, this just looks
stupid.
Yeah. I mean, between this. And the, whatever the name of the last one we talked about, Frozen Ground. What in the world are these movies?
And these will be in theaters. This isn't. This one's not direct to VOD. I don't think so.
Oh my gosh, Ethan Hawke. What is that dude? That dude. His movies make money.
Sinister made serious cash.
He makes money with his The Purge.
Yeah, that one too.
He makes these dumb movies that something about him appeals to people and. Oh, I don't
Maybe
get it.
People like Ethan Hawke.
This movie just...
I like Martin Scorsese, and I like Robert De Niro. And when I found out they were going to make a mob movie that was kind of funny, I thought, eh, all right, we'll give it a try. So I did. I tried the trailer for The Family. Try being the key word. It's essentially Red Family style and equally as over the top. Essentially, Robert De Niro goes rat.
Yeah.
And he gets put in witness protection, so they move him to France. And apparently some mobsters show up in France with a rocket launcher to try and kill his family, who are equally as skilled in weaponry, and it just looks ridiculous.
Yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer is the wife. Diana Agron from Glee and I Am Number 4 is the daughter. And there's a kid, and Tommy Lee Jones is the agent that has to keep moving them. It's directed by Luc Besson. It looks kind of funny, but
kind of, but then when the action starts, I keep thinking to myself, I don't buy this girl, like, loading clips like she's John McClane. I don't like that.
I'm holding out judgment just because I do like Besson. I mean, Besson's taken movies that I didn't think looked interesting, like Unleashed or something, and made really good movies out of them. Haven't seen him do a lot of comedy, so I'll give it a try.
You stick your toe in that. Let me know how you feel. I was set to try and like the next movie. It's Paranoia with Liam Hemsworth, the one that was going to marry Miley Cyrus, or was married to, I don't know. But at any rate, he plays some kind of a hacker type person who gets hired.
A genius of some sort. Which is believable.
Yeah, well, you know, he's got great hair. To spy on Harrison Ford's company and steal secrets and give it to some other dude. And at that point, I was okay. Fine. End the trailer about a minute and 15 in, and we're good. But then it proceeds to, oh, things don't turn out quite the way you think. Oh, Harrison Ford's onto him.
He knew he was, basically,
they ruined the movie.
Liam Hemsworth is hired by Steve Jobs to spy on Bill Gates.
Yeah.
But then later in the trailer, you realize, oh, Bill Gates has known the whole time that Liam Hemsworth is working for Steve Jobs. That's it. That's the movie. One of them's bald. I think Harrison Ford's
bald.
He's bald. Gary Oldman could do better. But this is one of those movies that looks like it appeals to, I think it'll do okay.
Probably. If they would have just not told me that Harrison Ford knows, I'd be much more interested in seeing it. But I hate the fact that, like, they just feel like they have to give you so much. It's like the trailer is literally blowing you to get you to call it back. And I just am not interested.
And I mean, like, for a minute, it feels like it has, like, a Wall Street vibe.
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to see, like, oh, is Harrison, who's Gordon Gekko here? Is it Harrison Ford or Gary Oldman? Like, if you give me a movie and you let me go into it knowing that he's, you know, Gary Oldman hired him to spy on Harrison Ford, but I don't know if Gary Oldman's doing that for the better of mankind or that, I don't know. Let me guess. Let me find it out by seeing this movie. Like, I'm kind of into corporate espionage stuff like that. Like that, and I mean, especially, like, I love that Gordon Gekko type character, which either one of them could end up being. Give me that, but the trailer just, it was like too much. Like, it blew me and then asked me if I wanted to meet its mom right after. So it's like, whoa, like, slow down. Like, you had me hooked. Now you lost
just
me.
Just stop it at the first half of that.
Yes.
It doesn't need to be 2 minutes. Trailers are too long, and not just because they're boring.
Not just that they're too long, they give away too much.
Yes, for their own good. It's entirely, if this trailer was like 75 seconds, it would have been fine.
Because I don't know that there's anybody that watches that first minute and 15 and thinks, unless there's some double crossing, I'm not really into this
unless
movie.
Unless there's some triple crossing.
Okay, there we go.
It doesn't look like there's any double crossing in Coffee Town, but it does look like there is an equally thin criminal plot, but at least this is supposed to be funny. It's got Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny.
Ben Schwartz,
yeah,
who I love.
Lots of dudes.
Jake Johnson.
Josh Groban.
who is legitimately funny.
Yes, looks really funny in the trailer. They've got him singing a little bit.
I mean, he's just, Josh Groban is really funny. He was the fiance in Crazy Stupid Love. I actually have seen the episode of Glee he shows up on. And I saw him in something else that you wouldn't think he'd be in. This is a College Humor movie. It's made by College Humor. It looks pretty funny. Glenn Howerton is always at this coffee shop. I think he's a writer.
Yeah.
He calls it his office. And then somebody comes in and wants to shut it down.
They want to make it into like a bistro or something that's just not going to be conducive to him slacking off. So he decides to break into the place just so they will think it's in a bad neighborhood and won't change things over. And that's all we know. And that's fine. I don't need to know anymore. I don't need to see him breaking in and the guy's going, oh, you know what? That's okay. We're still going to make this a bistro. Like, damn it. This trailer didn't piss me off. It was the fine.
Think it looks funny. I like Howerton.
Yeah.
I think he can carry something like this. I love Schwartz. Adrian Palicki shows up as like the dream girl. And Josh, I think a lot about it looks funny.
Yes, and I didn't have to hear 3.5 minutes of jokes from it. So again, I'm okay with that. Not so much a comedy is Blackfish. It is a documentary about the whale down at SeaWorld that was involved in killing the trainer. And
it's the third trainer it's killed over the past so many years.
Yeah, there's a little bit of
I generally leave off the trailers for documentaries, but man, this movie looks
this
awesome.
One looks kind of, it looks good. It's really a story good. I feel like everybody's familiar with on some level. And this, I mean, I guess documentaries are supposed to just kind of present the facts and not necessarily take one stance or the other. But it feels like, at least from the trailer,
it's very anti-captivity.
Right.
It reminds me a lot of, what was the dolphin one? Is that the
Cove?
The Cove. It's just very anti-captivity, and it talks about it. It looks, but then it's a documentary that looks like a psychological thriller. Like, it feels like a thriller, and this Takamine, or whatever the orca's name is, treats it like a Hannibal Lecter type character. Like,
yeah.
It's killed three already. And they talk about the cover-up, trying to, like, blame it on the trainer.
If you didn't know the story, you could easily think that this, you know, was set up to be sort of like a, I don't want to say found footage, but, like, when they splice in news feeds, yeah. All, like, mockumentary, maybe.
I mean, it looks good. It looks, for a documentary, it looks really good.
It does.
And, I mean, I don't mean to say that. I like documentaries, but this has more, this looks like something that even if you don't like documentaries, it looks like it'll appeal because it looks, it has the feel of a horror movie.
It looks very entertaining.
Yeah.
Which is something, documentaries are informative, not necessarily entertaining. This one looks like it would be both. Speaking of someone that looks like they could be both, Runner Runner, starring two handsome dudes, very handsome dudes, Ben Affleck and Justin Timberlake. Timberlake is some sort of mathematical savant, gambler, who ends up going to work for Ben Affleck, who may be some sort of Gordon Gekko type character.
Yeah, no. Timberlake gets taken for some money on an online poker game, but it's not mathematically possible, so he goes to, where is it, Jamaica? Or the Aruba?
Some place, offshore.
He goes somewhere to hunt down the runners of the site to realize, like, hey, that wasn't mathematically possible, and it turns out it's Ben Affleck who wants him to work for him. Ben Schwartz shows up again, who I like. I like Timberlake in this kind of role. It's weird to see Affleck there because this feels like
a giant
step back for Affleck because he's got some lines in there that look like, oh, that's the guy that was in Reindeer Games, not, oh, that's the guy that did Argo. And it feels like this is a Ben Affleck movie from 2002, not Ben Affleck now. That line about, like, oh, when I say you go take a beating, you go take a beating, and you come home and say, hey, you want me to take another one? Like, just that's old Ben Affleck. That's not this new revived career Ben Affleck. But maybe
he's not directing himself?
Maybe the trailer's not showing. Maybe, I mean, I had doubts about Leo and Django, and it worked out. But I'll see it. There's enough about it that just looks like a dumb action movie with a little bit more to it.
And I don't know the whole plot.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, exactly.
If I'm still curious, if I still have questions, then that's a good trailer.
Yeah, and I like Timberlake as a leading man. I truly do.
Yeah, no, I do too. I'm interested to see Affleck play that villain, that out-and-out, like, bad dude. Because I just don't feel like we see it enough. And I feel like he is an out-and-out bad dude. Final trailer, Insidious Chapter 2. I think Dave saved this for the end so we could just kind of skip over it. It says in the trailer, like, that things aren't done. There's still things that are happening with this family. And, of course, if you've seen Insidious, you know that. The way that movie ends absolutely sets up for a sequel. And in the sequel, they're like, guess what? There's a sequel.
Here, remember this trailer for the first one? Here's kind of the same thing, just in a different setting. It's very similar to the first one. Except the first one I thought was a good trailer. The first one had some good scares. It made me interested in seeing it. Generally, I don't like these movies. If you give me a movie that's the first 40 minutes of Insidious, I'm into it. I love the first 40 or so minutes of Insidious. Everything after that makes me hate Insidious and get furious when I talk about it. And I just feel like this is going to be more of the same. I don't care. The Further is such a stupid idea.
I even kind of liked the end of it, but I don't need to see it again. Like, that's kind of a one...
It doesn't feel like it's expanding anything. It just feels like, oh, stuff's still happening. We got to do this
right.
all
it's
over
like
again.
It's like Paranormal Activity 2 and 3 and
well,
4.
Those are different families, at least.
No, not really.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, Paranormal Activity 2 was the sister.
But it's the sister, and then the sister shows up. Like,
because it was concurrent.
It's all the same. It's all the same story. But it's all the same. It's all the same trick. Like, they...
Yeah.
I don't need a device from the story to allow it to be a sequel. It just needs to do something different.
Yeah.
And I think that our arguments are really the same, that this just looks
that,
like
no,
more
I see
of
your
Insidious.
Point now. I see your point now. Paranormal Activity 2, 3, I did 4, I don't care. Like, that never really bothered me because it is a different family. You're making the same movie but with a different family. I made the point earlier about The Purge. You can make that a franchise and just do a different family's experience throughout The Purge every year.
And I won't like it, but you
no,
could do
but
that.
I mean, you could do that. And with Paranormal Activity, for Insidious Chapter 2, if you're bringing the same people back, I need that story expanded. I need something else brought to it to where it's not just, oh, I'm watching the same family go through the same thing again.
With the same twist at the end that I'm going to see coming this time.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be different. Maybe not. I don't know. I think we both have had guarded optimism about this is the end. We both like most of the people that are going to be in it.
I've been very optimistic. I mean, I don't know about money-wise, but
I think
it'll be great.
I think money-wise, we've both been very cautious about it. But getting a Wednesday release, getting the jump on Superman, with a lot of the promotion that it's been getting, I think it's got a real shot.
I think it's got a real shot because, I mean, they're doing... The rounds are getting hit heavy. The whole the cast is so big, and it's people,
and people know them
it's
and
people
like
that
them.
Like it's everybody. Like I mean, they're doing the podcast rounds. Even they have even Kevin Hart hitting stuff, and even though he seems to have a smaller part, but Kevin Hart brings you a whole different audience. And no, I mean Kevin Hart's selling out 15,000 to 20,000 seat arenas. So to show him in a movie trailer and not just do that. Have him out doing press for it.
Not just comedy nerds.
Yeah.
He maybe appeals to a broader demographic than Aziz.
Yeah. So, I mean, which Aziz appeals to that audience, to a different audience, too. So, I mean, you have so much. And then Mindy Kaling, like Michael Cera. Like, there's so many people you see that, most of the Rihanna? Like most of their roles are probably small, but it might be just enough to get people out. What's going to do is word of mouth. Like, can this compete with Superman? Do people who don't care about Superman, will the people that rush out and see this Wednesday, what are they telling their friends that are going out to see something Friday that maybe don't just want to see Superman but will if there's no other option? So word of mouth is going to carry this movie, and apparently the third act is just insane. So I'm really excited to see it and to see how it does.
I may go see it Wednesday.
I'm thinking about it.
Because I know I'm going to see Superman on Friday. I want to. But yeah, this looks really
I think it'll be
funny.
Fun. I mean, I love everybody in it. I love Danny McBride, Seth Rogen, Craig Robinson, Jonah Hill. I love the entire cast. So,
Jay Baruchel.
Yeah. I mean, I love them all. So I think it'll be funny. I think it'll be really good.
So how much money do you think it's going to make?
From Friday to for the weekend?
Give it Wednesday through the weekend.
40 plus.
40. I'll give you the over.
I'm going over. I think it could do 40 just on the weekend. I really do.
Superman's going to make a lot of money. I don't think either of us would be shocked if that was the number one movie this weekend. I mean, I'd probably be shocked if it wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't think The Internship, I mean, that being the other comedy.
Internship's going to drop fall and
yeah,
far and
forget
fast.
It. The Even, Purge, I feel like.
I don't think word of mouth was that great on it. I think people that their interest was piqued, for the most part, saw it. The people who were like, I'll wait and see how it does or how people react to it. I don't think it's got a strong enough reaction.
Yeah,
really...
I feel like that's easily less than 20 this weekend.
Oh, yeah, you're talking probably 15-ish.
Yeah.
It'll probably drop 55-60%.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious is getting near the end of it's, like, people rushing out. I mean, I think This Is the End could do 40 just over the weekend.
I feel okay with that. So what do you think that leaves for Superman?
My gut.
You hate this movie. You want it to make $16.
No, I don't. Because, I mean, I don't know what to think because it's going to make a lot of money. I'm just debating. Like, my gut says 150, but my head's kind of saying probably closer to that 125. I think it's in that range. So let's set it at 125.
I'll take the over.
I'm taking the over. Would you take the over at 150?
I don't think I would. I would feel better about it if it was a holiday weekend. If it was Memorial Day weekend, I would.
I think I would take the. I think it does 150.
Either way, we'll both stick with the over on 40 at This Is the End. The over at 125.
It's a lot of money this weekend
on Superman 2.
And it's not a holiday weekend.
No, I feel like it'll be a lot of money at the top, but I think everything else is going to kind of thin out. In limited release, a couple movies that we've talked a little bit about before. Sofia Coppola's Bling Ring will be out, so you'll get to see Emma Watson a bunch this weekend. And movie that I want to see, and I might be the only one, Barbarian Sound Studio. It's that
Toby Jones
is a
looks like an old
sound editor.
Italian Hitchcock, yeah. like if Hitchcock made an Italian horror movie, that's what it
or
looks
if
like.
Argento made a movie. Italian Hitchcock.
It looks really, really good.
Yeah. DVDs this week, maybe not so much good. Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters. Oz the Great and Powerful, which I still kind of want to see. So I'm glad that's going to be out, as well as Dwayne Johnson's Snitch. So if you are similarly as unimpressed with the DVD lineup this week, Dave, why don't you give the folks something they can watch in the privacy of their own homes?
We mentioned Gillian Jacobs.
Yeah, we did.
From Community. She's shown up in movies along the way.
Yeah, she has.
She was in Choke, and that's mine this year, directed by Agent Coulson of the Avengers, starring Sam Rockwell. That's an okay adaptation of the Palahniuk book, but it's a fun movie. Like, Sam Rockwell makes it worth watching alone. Like, he's just good in a leading role, so, and she's really good in a supporting role.
I feel like I've probably talked about this movie before, but if I haven't, well, then good, because it just gives me a chance to talk about it again. It's starring, and that's in kind of loose air quotes, General Zod, the new one, Michael Shannon. It's a Sidney Lumet movie, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, also starring Ethan Hawke from a time, I think, when I liked Ethan Hawke. It was from 2007, so it's still relatively recent. Philip Seymour Hoffman's in it. Very good in it. Is it Marissa Tomei? Do Amy Ryan's in it a little bit? It has a really good cast, and I want to say it was the last movie that Lumet directed before he died. It's a little bit slower paced, I think, but still really, really good. And you know, maybe you forget after you watch Sinister.
I've seen this movie.
Yeah. After you watch Sinister and after you watch maybe The Purge, that Ethan Hawke is actually a really good actor, because it had been, at this point, it's probably been close to 20 years since he was actually acting. But he did really well in this movie. So
I forgot about that. Yeah, I remember this movie. Yeah. I had to look it up because I wasn't. Yeah, I remember the jewelry store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The jewelry store gets knocked over, and Philip Seymour Hoffman somehow manages to have sex with Marissa Tomei. That's the takeaway, and that happens really early in the movie. So you have to suspend your disbelief almost immediately. You won't have to suspend your anticipation much longer for our top five list of movie villains. Favorite movie villains, best movie villains, favorite.
Underrated movie villains.
Overrated movie villains.
It's about movie villains.
Yes. So that is our discussion episode this week. It'll be up in just a couple days on moviesonup.com. You can get it there. You can get it on the iTunes, or you can get it on the Stitcher. We are available all three ways. Or if you like, handwrite me a letter and you live close, I may actually just burn it to you on a CD and bring it to you.
You can find us at moviesonup on Twitter, facebook.com/moviesonup. Email us moviesonup@gmail.com. Find me at Dave Bacella on Twitter, DaveBacella.com. I have another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. That's EricandDave.com, Eric with a K.
That'll do it for us for the news episode. Hang out a couple days. We'll be back at you with our favorite movie villains of all time. But until then,
keep it up.